Tagore, who did a wonderful job helping us understand the breadth and depth of Tagore. And so when we were looking at this particular new book, the Richard Rohr book, I thought of Kathleen would be a great speaker. Beyond her, you can see in her bio that it was all shared. She's been a scholar for a number of years. She came to UCSB, professor of religious studies, and has a lot of experience in research, writing, and teaching in religion itself, as well as law and society, issues of civil rights, issues of the relationship between church and state. She played a very strong role in articulating the rights of Muslim women, and especially after the 9/11 era. And in addition to all that, she's very much knows what it's like for all of us who've been on the ground in religious institutions. She's a deacon in St. Mark's in Isla Vista in the Episcopal Church. So it's great to have somebody who can see the big global picture, but as well as the nitty gritty of what goes on in any religious tradition when we're gathering as communities. So she seemed a perfect person to have join us for this series with Richard Rohr. And so looking forward, Kathleen, to your comments on Jeremiah. Take it away.
Can we bless her before she gets started? Is that okay, Kathleen?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Thanks.
Okay.
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you with joy.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. That gracious introduction and the blessing, I just love it. I want to give a reflection on Jeremiah and the tears of things. I guess this week is chapter 5. But I want to thank you again before I start for inviting me to join you in this journey through Richard Rohr's new book, The Tears of Things. I've long admired Rohr's writing and his ministry, and this has been a rich opportunity to reflect on his insights. And I'm anticipating hearing some really good interpretations today from you. When I think about Jeremiah, two images come to mind. The first is a small needlepoint that hangs on my bedroom wall. My great aunt Lois made it the day that I was born. And it's a verse from Matthew 22 where Jesus is asked, which commandment is the greatest? And Jesus responds by summing up the entire law. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. And then he adds, on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Right? So all the law and the prophets are rooted in these two commandments, love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. And that phrase, the law and the prophets, that's always stayed with me. And it appears several times in the New Testament. And it refers to the whole of the Hebrew scriptures, or the Torah, and the teachings of the prophets. Jesus is teaching, he says it again in Luke 16, where he says, the law and the prophets were in effect until John. Since then, the good news of the kingdom of God is proclaimed. So in Christian interpretation, of course, John the Baptist marks the hinge between the old covenant and the new, between the time of law and the time of grace. And Jeremiah then stands squarely in the prophetic tradition in the time of law, calling people back to covenant faithfulness, naming their idolatry and their injustice, and warning them of destruction if they don't return to God's ways. But he's also a bridge, I think, to grace, because he anticipates, unlike many of the other prophets, he had a unique message about restoration, about redemption, and suggested a new covenant, because Jeremiah doesn't stop there at warning of destruction. Even as he predicts judgment, he also holds out hope that God will not abandon his people, but will restore his people after exile. Jeremiah imagines a new kind of covenant, one not written on tablets of stone, but etched in human hearts. So Jeremiah's God, as Jeremiah sees God, God is not abolishing the law, but internalizing it. And Richard Rohr, I think, does a good job of pointing that out. It's a hinge in this chapter about a shift in theology, a shift in thinking, a shift in relationship. Because Rohr describes this shift from the laws of stone tablets to the law etched on the heart. He describes that, I think, beautifully as a move from external signs of belonging to internal heart religion. Jeremiah anticipates that turn, a covenant within. And his message, his unique message isn't only about doom, it's about transformation. Now, the second image that comes to my mind when I think of Jeremiah is from our own time, though it too speaks in a prophetic key. Some of you may remember what I'm talking about is some of you may remember the controversy around Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who was the pastor in Chicago who was once Barack Obama's spiritual mentor. And in 2008, he gained national attention by the things that he was reported to say in his sermons, and there were excerpts of his sermons that were circulated widely. And most notoriously, he made comments about 9/11 and other terrorist attacks that upset people. And he said this line, he said, "Not God bless America, but God damn America." And that was torn from its context and replayed endlessly over and over again on the news. Of course, it's because Reverend Wright was associated with a political leader, then presidential candidate Barack Obama. If he hadn't been, associated with somebody rising in the national scene, nobody would have heard or paid any attention to what he was saying. So Reverend Wright was preaching. I think that Wright is a good example of somebody like where Richard Rohr says that prophets to be effective must live on the edge of the inside, right? They need to be connected if they're going to be effective, but they're also the constant critic of the status quo and those who are in power. And I think Reverend Wright was preaching from the prophetic tradition. His sermon, Confusing God and Government, condemned national hubris and systemic injustice, those things that Richard Rohr points out as being collective evil, not individual evil, but things like systemic injustice, systematic racism, and war. And so, like Jeremiah of old, Reverend Wright called his people to account, but his words were heard as unpatriotic, offensive, even dangerous. So those are the two things that come to mind for me immediately when I'm thinking about Jeremiah is my great aunt Lois's needlepoint and Reverend Jeremiah Wright in the political scene. Rohr reminds us that prophets have to live on the edge of the inside, as I mentioned, and they have to live close enough to love the community, but far enough to see its illusions and flaws clearly. Reverend Wright's position was exactly that. He was both inside and outside, pastor and critic. And as Richard Rohr notes, the prophetic pattern always moves through these three stages, right? Through judgment, through punishment, and then restoration. And I wonder, as Rohr does, what redemption looks like for us today. After all our judgment and punishment, what a reordering or a new covenant might mean for us today. And perhaps this is where Rohr's insight feels most timely, because he writes this. He says, "There must be enough order to contain disorder." And I just love that phrase, that this image, you have to have the container before you have, the chaos. You have to have the law. And only when we're grounded in God's law of justice and love can we risk the chaos and the disruption that prophecy demands. We can step into that creative and chaotic world that leads to renewal only when we're grounded in something like God's law. And I think here too, I rely on the legal scholar Robert Cover, who's been a real influence in my career. Cover was a Yale Law School professor and somebody I knew when I studied with while I was going through graduate school in Massachusetts. And he was a Jewish activist as well as a legal scholar, and tragically died too young. But in his short life, he produced a lot of influential commentary, I would say, on the status of the country. And Robert Cover had said that law is always created on a battlefield, but it can all but law can also become a bridge. Law is destructive and it's violent, but it also promises a future, a bridge between the world as it is and the world that it might as it might be, as we would like to see it, as Jesus would say in his words, as the kingdom of God. Law or covenant becomes the shared story that helps us imagine a more just future. And just today we're hearing news of a ceasefire after 2 years of war in Gaza. And people are celebrating, the imminent exchange of hostages and prisoners, but at what cost? And what does the future hold? And maybe this is what Rohrer means when he invites us to let Jeremiah's transformation of his theology fully transform ours, to move from retribution to restoration, from punishment to mercy, from fear to hope. So maybe the question for us, the lesson that we can take after reading the tears of things and revisiting Jeremiah, is not only how we read these prophets, but how we live them. And so that's my reflection. I'd like to end by inviting your thoughts, and so we can go into breakout sessions for discussion. I've provided some discussion questions to prompt as prompts.
Thanks, Kathleen. Do you want to read them? I'm going to put them
Oh
in
yeah,
the chat
sure.
right now, so.
Okay, yeah. Number one is, where do you see prophetic voices like Jeremiah's or like Reverend Wright's in our world today? Where do you see prophetic voices like Jeremiah's or Reverend Wright's in our world today? And then secondly, how do we hold that tension between judgment and hope, between calling out and calling forward? And the third is, and what might a new covenant written on the heart look like for us, personally, spiritually, or even communally in this moment?
Great, thank you. Well, friends, we're going to have, I think, about 30 minutes for breakout here for reflection groups. So I will send you a little pop-up here in a moment. You should be in a group of no less than three, no more than five. And we'll come back around 10:50 or so our time for a little bit further conversation with Kathleen. So here we go. Well, we've got some time here for some reflection and conversation with Kathleen. Kathleen, I don't know if you have any opening comments, but if not, we can just take some questions from the crew here. You just got to make sure you unmute if you're saying anything.
Sorry, yeah. No, I was saying I don't want to say anything really, that I want to hear, from people what their thoughts are of this book and also the current moment, how this applies to our current moment.
Cool. Yeah, Cindy, you want to go ahead?
Yes. Kathleen, I really appreciated your the points that you made about Jeremiah and the prophets in general, particularly about the bridge building, and what was interesting for me, I was part of a training yesterday of that came out of Reverend Buddy's preaching, at the inauguration at the mass. And it's a training program, and it's concerning bravery. There's another word that's kind of attached to it, but it's training people to think about what bravery is about nowadays. Okay. And it came out of the book that she wrote on bravery. But one of the things she spoke about and was the bravery of most of our examples of bravery are men. And I'm wondering if there, and I brought up Reverend Buddy as someone who I think is a now a
Prophet.
contemporary prophet.
Yeah, she came up in our group too.
Okay. And are there other women that you're seeing around, and men? But they're coming up. I feel that they're coming up, but we're not, don't have the ears to listen or something.
I think people who are doing, just as you were saying, sort of this mediation, interventions to put people who are so polarized on the path to speaking and understanding one another. And I don't know that I can really point to anybody. There's is his name Benjamin Barber, who's worked with the poor, but he doesn't get a lot of national attention.
William
I
Barber,
think William, I'm sorry, William Barber. And I don't know, Tim, do you have ideas about, I mean, you're close to the ground with conventions and clergy and stuff. Is do you know of anybody that you would name as a sort of a national figure who's doing this, that's trying to bring people and weave us back into civilization?
You mean in terms of female voices?
Or male, yeah.
Oh, I think there's lots of folks. I mean, we, gosh, we, Caitlin Curtis comes to mind. There are national voices, especially indigenous voices, I think, that are trying to call us back to a kind of, civilizational togetherness that reflects more of our commonality and our relationship with the earth. And it tends to be, I mean, we just did a book also with Bishop Stephen Charleston recently at Word and Life here. I think those voices seem to me to be, prophetic in that same way. But then we have lots of other friends like Richard and Brian and those folks out at the Center for Action and Contemplation. I think of, yeah, just, Rev Jackie as well, who's out there doing wonderful work. Jackie Lewis. So yeah, there's a few folks, but they're out
Yeah,
there.
somebody in the chat just said Gregory Boyle. And that's a good
Oh
one,
yeah.
who's
Yeah.
been working for decades. But yeah, the skill to be able to bring people into the room is really, what I had in mind. And I really admire how Marion Buddy had spoke out, spoke truth to power exactly in that inaugural mass. And they were all right there. It wasn't just Trump, it was Vance and everyone else, whether they were listening or not. But then, what has happened to her since then? She does have a blog, or what do you call that, a Substack. And you were talking about a training group that was based on her book Bravery, and that's a good ripple effect. But she's never been heard on the national stage since then. So I don't know whether why we're so in disarray, that we can't organize ourselves into having a prophetic voice that's powerful, that is consistent, that we hear, on a regular basis.
And may I just follow up with another question? I'm very concerned about us moving into Nazism and anti-Semitic, and I think that there is a righteous anger out there that Christians have difficulty dealing with their own anger, and they move into forgiveness, not even forgiveness, they move into kind of an apathy rather than to deal with their righteous anger. And I think that that really has not been collected enough in our country to help us. It was anger that motivated the civil rights movement in many, many ways. And they turned it, they transformed it into nonviolence. Can you speak to Christian anger and how it sometimes gets sidelined?
Right. Yeah, it does get sidelined, because we're so uncomfortable with it, especially progressive Christians, who aren't looking at the world in black and white terms of not wanting to blame any individual, right? Because that's not the Christian thing to do, or point fingers. And so, do we have the we need to embrace, I think, that prophetic voice, that key, in which we can speak about things that are common to all of us, that that there are systems and processes that work against love, against humankind, that might lead us into accepting authoritarianism and not resisting. So Dietrich Bonhoeffer, that's a name that comes to
Yes,
mind too,
yeah.
but this is someone who, really sacrificed his own life for his principles and for that Christian love. And wasn't nonviolent, started out as nonviolent, but was not, did not stay committed to that because of the desperate measures that were required because of the Nazis, how far authoritarianism had gone. If we could arrest authoritarianism before it gets to that
Yeah.
point, that would be great. But as Christians, to answer your question, I think that we each individually feel very uncomfortable with that emotion of anger. I know I was raised to suppress that feeling, and not to act out in anger. That wasn't the thing that women did. Finding our voice is really, I think, key to that. Finding our voice. I don't know, what do you see these in your training? How would you answer your own question, Cindy, about
Well,
Christians and anger?
I particularly see it, and my training group was only women. I know they have men in it, and it's a national, training group. But my own experience is the anger that women hold becomes very depressive for them and the others around them. And then they get really afraid of it because it comes out explosive. It comes out as rage. And I think that there needs to be some sort of sessions to help women deal with it because it's legitimate anger. So many of the women that were in the training had domestic abuse experiences, right? Or other experiences by institutions of discrimination, sexual abuse. And the anger, is palatable when they talk about it, but they don't talk about it right away. You know, you have to kind of get it from them. And I'm also thinking about how Reverend Buddy and other women have become invisible under this administration.
Well, you know, is it
I
any
mean,
wonder women don't want to express their anger because look at, you know, or about talk about their experience with sexual abuse and domestic abuse because look at everything that's happening, you know, at the national level and the excuses around Epstein and the people who are in power are getting away with so
yeah.
much abuse and so much toxic masculinity there. So, yeah, I'm sorry. I see somebody has their hand up. Jackie, are
Yeah,
you?
Jackie, you want to go ahead? Make sure you unmute.
I should put her hand down.
Jackie, you got to make sure you unmute. There you
I was
go.
trying to, but I skipped her. My
Got her camera.
lost its place. Anyway, from my own experience, I have found that the only way to manage your anger or to get past your anger or through your anger is with forgiveness. And I found myself unable to forgive without asking God, not just to help me, but to do it for me. And I won't tell you the story now, but he did in a dream. The anger that I had was gone in the morning because of the dream and because of my prayer. And I think if we all could realize that forgiveness is such a difficult thing to do, you just don't do it automatically. You've been to church, you know you're supposed to forgive, and you could give lip service to it all you want, but it sneaks back in there anyway. And it's only through God, through whatever your higher power is, that can give you the help you need. I call it angels. I always feel as though the angels surrounding all of us that we don't notice most of the time. But when you ask for things, it's surprising sometimes the answers you get and the help that comes with it.
Thanks. Well, I think that, you know, might be an example of a new covenant written on the heart, you know, that Rara is talking about with, you know, Jeremiah as the example of the new covenant written on the heart, what that might look like for us personally in this moment. And it's important, but I think there's also that righteous anger that Cindy had mentioned, you know, that we are rightfully angry about things that are happening in our country. And that's kind of God's, I think God's judgment. And where's the hope? Where's the hope that lies in the kernel of God's judgment of what's happening? I think, you know, like we're talking about women and expressing their anger, or women whose roles have been suppressed in these days. And just the other day, what's her name? Pamela Bondi? Is that her name? Pam Bondi? I was outraged by the way she, the contempt she had for the process. You know, she was at here a congressional hearing and asked questions, and she was so contemptuous. And, you know, I don't know. This is just, it's like we're saying in our group, I can't believe I've lived long enough to be in this world that I don't even recognize anymore. I don't recognize it. How could somebody get away with being that contemptuous and evading questions? They just have no respect for the process at all. Anyway, so that's my righteous anger of the moment is that you know, it just every day there's some instance.
Judy, I saw a hand and then I see Ingrid's hand as well.
I did. I just wanted to mention that what Richard Rohr is talking about in the book is the process that the prophets have gone through from anger to sadness. That from
Yes.
sadness, then hopefully comes the loving part of it. That's one thought that I had. And the other one thing I wanted to bring up, that it seems like the people are not understanding that we have a multiracial society, and multiracial democracy is what we're going for. But if you only want white people, you're not going to be in the conversation. So that is my dilemma. How is this going to be resolved when people are so far apart about racism? It's that's the basis. That's the basis. Thank you.
Ingrid, go ahead.
Going back to just the previous conversation, I really think as women, but maybe as a society, we're being forced to do our own psychological work and spiritual work, to learn to deal with our own, if we've had abuse, to learn to deal with the anger about that, to learn to speak in love. And we're being forced into a box. And I hope the pressure of that box, the holy pressure of that box, brings out the best in us, the righteous anger coupled with love. I think that's what the world will hear. You don't hear it when it just comes as anger, but if there's love behind it, that's what I think what we're called to do right now.
Thank you. Yeah, Marie, you want to unmute and go ahead?
Just to speak from personal experience, I had an experience of forgiveness, forgiving someone who for years was abusive toward me. And it took me forever. But what I discovered was, in the act of forgiveness, there was this feeling of relief, of like something floating off my shoulders, like a weight. And I loved the feeling that came from forgiveness. It was like feeling blessed, or feeling, I guess, as some of you have said, loved. And so I have come to recommend it to people as a process, if they can do it, because it is not just forgiving someone else, it reverberates back to oneself.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else have any thoughts?
Looked like Barbara had something. Nope.
Yeah, I don't see that. Well, Steve, would you like to close us out here?
Sure. I was struck when I mentioned in my small group that I experience a lot of this sorrow, anger, confusion, depression in a very isolated way. And it's very helpful to be with 30 other people, and with you helping us, Kathleen, express it and think about it and reflect on different angles to look at it. Maybe Jeremiah got a straight an immediate, I'm sure he waited at times, but word from God. But we're all struggling to find what's the word from God right now. We know where things should be. We know we're not there. How do we find it? So thank you for leading us in this discussion and helping us listen to each other and hopefully be open to where God can lead us.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure. And we're in this together. That's the main thing. We've got to remember that.
All right, Judy. Any other?
Okay, we have a few minutes left. So I've got a couple of things that I wanted to talk about. But not only thanking Kathleen, thank you again I hope that you will come back to us when we have another book coming up. Next week, I wanted to tell everybody about Alice. Alice is going to be our speaker next week, Alice McDonald. And Alice knows more about Word and Life than any one of us. She's been with us since the beginning, 48 years ago. She's been there, and she's going to be talking about session six, which is Unfinished Prophets, Elijah, Jonah, and John the Baptist. And I also want to tell you about this is a little anticipatory set going on here. The website from CAC, Center of Action and Contemplation, has Everything Belongs. And we have that website on our website. So you can check out the one that Alice is going to be speaking about next week. Just go down to wordandlife.us and keep scrolling down to the bottom till you find the Everything Belongs podcast. And look up number six, because that's what Alice is going to be talking about, right? Yes, session six. And it's the same title, about Elijah, Jonah, and John the Baptist. Richard Rohr speaks for an hour in conversation with some of his staff members. And it's really worth it. So you can listen to him in conversation. And then the third thing I wanted to bring up is our in-person luncheon. That's going to be happening on the 20th after we have the last session, which is the 17th or the 13th. Then we have November 20th, and it's going to be just like last time at 2101 State Street in the church there. And hopefully, well, we haven't asked Alice, but hopefully we'll ask her to speak. She will hopefully want to be the speaker on the last, just to round us off and to summarize everything. Not only summarize the session that we've just done, but the whole Word in Life. I mean, we've been together, and I haven't been there since the beginning. And not too many other people have, but Alice has. So she'll be there to talk us through. Alice, is that a possibility you might want to talk to us on? Yes, she's shaking her head. Yes. All right. Thanks, you, Alice. And let's unmute. And
just a second, Judith. I just want to say Tim is going to be not with us next week, but he's going to a gathering of prophets at the pub in Minneapolis. Is it? Tim, I don't know if you want to say a word about the folks you're gathering with.
Well, I'll be speaking at a conference in Minneapolis, Minnesota next week called Theology Beer Camp. It's sort of a academic theology meets craft beer enthusiast space, but a lot of people who are wondering and wandering into whatever this next phase of Christianity is going to be will be there. They sell it out. It's 400 or 500 people, a lot of young folks too, who are interested in the future of theology. So I'll be speaking there, leading a day on process theology and contemplative practice, and then another breakout session on a similar topic. So, but all that to say, it's next Thursday. If any brave soul feels like they want to run the Zoom next week, that would be wonderful. Feel free to reach out. If not, I hope I can, during my lunch break, help us with that and make sure we get everything going. But if you want to do it, please let me know or let the steering committee know. So,
thank you, Tim. And maybe you can find some prophets for us, some speakers for us at your
convention. Sure. Jackie, you have something?
I just had one last thing to say that just occurred to me. The overall definition of a prophet is not one who gets angry necessarily or predicts the future or any of those. The overall definition is one who speaks the word of God. So therefore, any one of us could be a prophet at any time and slip in and out of prophecy. We don't have to be a prophet every moment, but we could be a prophet. Let's not be afraid sometimes if something comes into our mind that seems really important and seems to be coming from somewhere else other than our usual thought patterns. Let's speak out. Maybe just bits and pieces. Everybody can prophesy and everybody can make a difference.
And maybe go ahead.
Just like we're all ministers.
Mm-hmm. Maybe
We all can have the gift of prophecy given to us at certain times in our lives, and it behooves us not to be afraid to use this gift.
And maybe one of us has the gift of being a Zoom master. We can.
Just for 1 week. Just for 1 week.
I'll volunteer to do that job.
Who is that speaking?
That's Catherine Weisenberg.
Oh, Catherine. All right. All right. There you go, Tim. All right. Thank you, Catherine Weisenberg. Thank you very much. All right. So let's again unmute, say thank you to Kathleen, and I'll see you next week. And we'll have Catherine as our webmaster, our Zoom master.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you all.
Yeah.
Catherine, I'll reach out this week.
Okay. All right.
Question is October 20th or November 20th?
The luncheon is November.
November. And it's the same place as Waco, Tim?
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
And what time?
Noon potluck.
12 o'clock.
Thank you. Take care.
Great.
Thanks, all right. Bye bye. Thank you.
Yeah. Bye.